Tearfund Ireland is a Christian charitable organisation which strives to end poverty by working through the church community to see lasting local change with whole communities lifted out of poverty for good. Amanda Prather works with Tearfund Ireland and she took some time to speak to me about the work of this organisation. Amanda, thank you for your time. Thanks for taking time to chat to me today.
Oh, thank you so much for having me here, Arthur.
Tearfund Ireland, just give us a background. How did this organisation all start out?
So Tearfund Ireland used to be a part of Tearfund UK, and we have now established as Tearfund Ireland. So what we do here is we seek to demonstrate God's goodness, love, and justice. So we're Christ-centered, and we want to see communities flourish and lift themselves out of poverty through projects we support with local partners. So we work in Cambodia, Ethiopia, and Lebanon. And we also do various humanitarian responses, such as Syria, the Horn of Africa. And so we just kind of do a little bit of things that arise. We see where we can work out of and what would best suit our partners.
On a day-to-day basis, give us an example, I suppose, of how your support can actually make a difference in terms of how you operate on the ground.
Yes, yeah, so we have local partners that we work on the ground. So as I mentioned, we work in Cambodia, Ethiopia, and Lebanon primarily. So one example of what we do is self-help groups in Ethiopia. These groups are groups of 15 to 20 women who are among the poorest in their community. And what we call the SHGs, or the self-help groups, they create a platform for these women to build relationships, solve problems, save money, and they get low-interest loans and have informal insurance in times of disasters and shocks. For example, if there's drought or if there's any flash flooding or if there's just shocks within like their community themselves. So what these women do is they give out loans to members, and they usually are invested in individual or group income generating activities. So it'd be small businesses, like coffee or something like that. They sell crops, and it helps increase their household income. And so sometimes they might use it for an example, like if they were to have education fees or healthcare fees, they might invest in that first and then go on to develop their small businesses. So one example of a woman impacted by the self-help groups is a woman named Master. So she's a mother of four in Ethiopia. And so for a long time, she really wanted to have a small business. And she and her husband just had a lot of financial struggles. And they tried for years and years to secure loans, but they just weren't able to due to the economic situation. So she had been approached in her local community to join a self-help group. And I think a lot of women are initially hesitant to do these, but because they're able to see the impact it has on the community and their neighbors, they do have a bit more confidence in joining once they've talked and kind of learned about the program. So she decided to join in 2015, and she said that that day was a turning point in her life as it brought her new hope. So now within 5 years of joining her self-help group, she started her own small business. She started out with grain and butter, but then she's expanded. So she has poultry, fattening of the animals, beekeeping, dairy, and she continues to sell animal products. And so she was once a high school dropout, but now she has a college diploma in accounting. So the donations and support from people here in Ireland and elsewhere, it just makes a big difference in lives of people like Aster in Ethiopia.
Okay, you mentioned other countries as well. You mentioned earlier about the Horn of Africa. Give us an understanding of what's Tearfund Ireland doing there.
So Horn of Africa is humanitarian response. So right now there's been very serious drought that's occurred. So for 3 years, they've had failing harvest and just millions are impacted. The malnutrition rates are going up and families are having to leave their home to go search for food and water. It's quite dire. Like children are having to drop out of school. So what we're doing to help combat that is through the self-help groups. So through these self-help groups, they're working to prevent communities that have limited access and failed production of food are looking to prevent that. Having limited access. The one way they do it is conservation agriculture. Now that's a farming technique and it's based on three different principles. So it's minimum tillage, natural mulch cover. So that would be if you were to take, you know, crops that have died and then just putting that on top of the soil so it'd be able to retain the moisture that way. So you're not relying on chemicals or fertilizers, which aren't great for the soil, but they're also quite expensive as well. And then crop rotation. So it might be, you know, doing beans one season and then the next you're doing maize or something like that. So this method allows the reliance on rain. So in situations where there is drought, to be minimized, and it's to prevent loss of harvest when there is extreme weather patterns, you know, whether it's drought or flash flooding. And it's a great opportunity for people in those communities to double their harvest and to be able to be resilient in the face of all these weather changing patterns.
Okay. Of course, there's many other areas of the world you're working as well. Of course, Cambodia is one area I think you mentioned earlier on when we were talking before we came on air. But of course, Cambodia as a country has been ravaged by wars, dictatorship and everything over the years. So some work you're doing there as well. Tell us more about Cambodia.
Yeah, Cambodia is where we do a lot of work with to prevent family separation and improving the lives of orphan and vulnerable children. So a lot of people may not know this, but in fact, 80% of children that are living in orphanages have at least one living parent. So what our partners are wanting to do is to make sure that children are growing up in homes of family members, either their parents or external family members, or what we call kinship care, which is, when they're placed with external family members in the events that the parents are deceased or unfit to care for the child. Because we've learned through research that children growing up in orphanages just struggle a lot more. They struggle more emotionally. They struggle a lot more in adult lives. So it's one way that we're trying to reintegrate them back into family-based care. So they have, our partner there has parenting, youth, and community clubs, and these groups address how to best support the interest of those that are in orphanages and vulnerable children, and for their families in the community themselves. They also help families and the key people in the community learn how to prevent exploitation, protect the vulnerable children, and respond to those that have left institutionalized care. So, for example, we have a young girl that's 15 years old from Cambodia named Sirinit, and she's lived in an institution since 2017. Now, her mom left Thailand left Cambodia for Thailand in search of work. So she knew that she would be leaving the institution soon, and she had seen her older siblings leave and without any support or preparation, and they were kind of led down the wrong path and they left their school. So she was really trying to prevent that. So she joined one of the clubs that our partner in Cambodia set up. And so now she's, she was initially shy and fearful, but now she's gotten more involved in these clubs and she studied hard to graduate high school. She's leading activities and eventually built up her confidence and leadership skills. So now she's graduated, reintegrated back into her community, and now comes back and even supports the youth clubs. So she had told us she didn't expect any of her fears or confidence to go away, but she really enjoys participating and being involved with the youth clubs because they give good life knowledge, life skills, and it instills confidence where she only had fear before.
Okay. And I understand that Syria is another area you're working in. Of course, Syria, and it's been another country in the news, is really torn apart. There's been lots of misfortune, lots of hardship there. Tell us about what's happening on the ground in Syria, particularly there was a huge earthquake there, of course, as well.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think everyone is pretty aware of the devastation that Syria and Turkey both have faced in the earthquake. And I don't know the exact amount at the moment, but I know there was well over 50,000 that unfortunately had perished in this earthquake. And so in Syria, there's been so much trauma over the years because of the I think the war has been on 12 years now. And so they've been facing these, their livelihoods have been completely demolished and they're just trying to get back up on their feet. And unfortunately, they're having to deal with the aftermath of this earthquake, which someone had told me that 10 seconds, I think, of the earthquake was worse than, all of the aftermath of the war itself. So just to see the destruction that took place in that earthquake versus the previous 10 to 12 years that they've dealt with. So we're fortunate that we had a partner in Northwest Syria that was there on the ground and they were immediately able to start delivering items. So in the time it happened in February, so they were handing out winter items such as blankets, warm clothing, there was hygiene kits and ready to eat food baskets. So they were giving to families living in shelters. Now, many of these families already have been living in shelters because they've had to flee their homes because of the conflict there. So this is, again, just another added thing that they've been having to face. So we've fortunately been able to distribute over 3,000 blankets and jumpers and then over 4,200 hygiene kits. And so as time goes on, these needs are going to change. There's going to be a lot of, psychological needs there'll be as well. So our partner is going to be able to assess and work with those in those shelters and see what their most prominent needs are at the time and be able to work and see how they can address those.
Okay, you mentioned the term partners, of course, working with partners on the ground. We've mentioned, of course, with the Horn of Africa, Syria, and other places you're working in. But how does it actually work in terms of Tear Fund Ireland? Do Tear Fund Ireland send staff directly out to these places? Do you work with local organisations on the ground? How does it work in terms of logistics of providing these services?
So the only place that we have an office outside of Tear Fund Ireland is in Addis Ababa in Ethiopia. So we do have two full-time staff members that work in Ethiopia, and they help oversee the program in Ethiopia. But they also, with our local partners, for example, so we have one as a development wing of a church in Ethiopia, and they work with us there, but they are the ones that implement and run the programs. And they're the ones on the ground. They know what's best for the situation. We don't send anyone from Ireland over to the communities where we work. We rely on their knowledge and their expertise to be able to share with us what they think is best for the communities.
Amanda, tell us, in terms of day-to-day operations, in terms of public engagement, tell us about Tear Fund Ireland. How are you reaching out to people here in Ireland?
So we have various ways we reach out to people here in Ireland. So we have events that we did. For example, we just did a really great five-a-side church blitz on Saturday at the ALSA in Swords here in Dublin. It was a chance for churches and be able to come and compete against each other. And so it was a great opportunity not only to get churches involved, but to get people that might not be aware of Tear Fund Ireland or aware of, you know, or be in church themselves that might be on the fringes to be able to come and have a community event. So events are one way that we do it. We have learning journeys, which we have some for, if you'd like to know more about the self-help groups or all our alternative care work in Cambodia, we have a five-week email learning series. So you can go onto our website and sign up for that. It'll take you through the process of these programs as well. We have an upcoming event called Pedal Against Poverty, which is a cycling event. And it could be for anyone that might like just a leisurely ride in the park, or for someone that, you know, wants to train for the Tour de France. It could be just any realm of cycling experience that you'd like. And so that's a way to get people involved and to let people know why you're cycling and what you're cycling for. We always encourage people to pray, most importantly. We do have prayer bulletins here. So if you'd like to sign up for our monthly prayer bulletin, we send out, you know, what's going on in Tear Fund, and you can learn and help join us in prayer as we're going along with that. You can also sign up for our email list, which allows you to kind of get an idea of the upcoming events, you know, updates on our programs, things like that.
And overall, in terms of what you're saying to people, you mentioned, of course, is there opportunity for people to volunteer with Tear Fund Ireland?
Yeah, we're always up for volunteers. It would just depend on the time of year and what is going on to see what our needs would be. But more than welcome to contact us through our website, and then we can put you in touch with someone that might be able to give you more information about ways to get involved.
Amanda Prather from Tear Fund Ireland, thank you for your time.
Thank you so much.